Hello and welcome to One Game at a Time, where this week we look at finals and flags as we track the development of the laws and strategies that make our game the one that we know and love. You can catch us on the Facebook and Twitter at Origins of Footy. We welcome everything that you've got to say, every little criticism that you can find and every little bit that you want to grind us out. Are you listening, Kieran from Watsonia? but before we get to people such as that Bendigo, well, so-and-so, it's a very, very big hello to Ryan Mill.
Good evening, gents. Hope you're all well. It's very rainy tonight.
Absolutely.
He's absolutely chucking it down here. Luckily, yeah. We're in a lovely, warm studio, but yeah, I hope we're all okay. A
lot of ground under repair out there.
Yeah. You are killing these. You are absolutely killing these. Fair play. He's done very nicely there, isn't he?
How are you, Finn?
I'm good, gentlemen. I'm good. And as our current AFL season 2017 is coming to a close.
Buzz in the air.
We thought we should talk about finals and some of the great final systems or the not-so-great final systems that we've had throughout the years.
That's right. But look, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's get to what's really important. And let's get down to mailbag. So, Finn, tell us about you've been hassled from the place where they can fruit.
Oh, he's gone again, isn't he? He's just offending country Victorians all over the place.
What's we see about that? absolutely. Dee from Shep has written in. She asked, did we always have a grand final?
Nice.
The short answer is no.
Oh, I was going to say yes. It feels like we always have.
Mm. Absolutely not. Did we always have a grand final? And amazingly, the best team was determined throughout the year was by the media. So, as Mark Pennings has very concisely put, the Australasian, the Sportsman, the Argus, and the Journal, the footballer, even after the VFA was established in 1877, this did not lead to the publication of official ladders for some time. And it was only in 1887 that the VFA secretary, T.S. Marshall, which we remember was the captain of Royal Park, who instructed Jim Clark when playing against Henry Harrison in that famous match in 1865. Marshall produced the first ladder based on 4 points for a win and a percentage system that the VFA officially adopted in the 1888 season. But even this did not produce a grand final as such. It was actually in 1898 that the first kind of grand final, there was a last match of the round that determined who won the flag.
Yeah, so, I mean, well before that, it's more of a Premier League type finish. Top of the ladder is something that really matters.
Top of the ladder, but again, not officially.
Yeah.
Not officially done until 1888.
Something else came in, Ryan, from all the way from WA.
Yes, Facebook, again, we've got our first interstater. Pretty exciting stuff. We've covered country Victoria very nicely, despite Liam's best efforts to offend everyone that comes from those places. We've got Shepparton covered, and obviously Bendigo, Ballarat, but WA. Ryan, lovely name, Ryan, from WA.
Watch your contact, Dale, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, let's see how he goes with WA. So specifically for Liam, which I'm loving this from our listeners, is people writing personally to their favourite of the those three intense speakers that we have here. Yes. So why Liam, specifically Liam? He does seem the favourite on our social media. So why Liam were there two separate delegates from WA? Now, Ryan is obviously referring to our previous episode. I suppose asking specific questions around the two delegates from WA.
The Australasian Football Council.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the WA did have a delegate from the Waffle and a delegate from the Goldfields League, which is the Kalgoorlie League. You might presume that it's just because WA like to be different. They, in fact, as we spoke about many episodes ago, have an enormous gold rush.
Yeah.
And so the northern WA, in fact, becomes a really sort of busy sort of place. And when the discovery of gold and serious gold is found in the Kimberleys, the Pilbara regions and Murchison, you wind up with a pretty serious population there. Many of those people have played footy in the eastern states or down in Perth. They move there. Football becomes commonplace, so much so that it becomes, you know, it packs enough of a punch to warrant representation as a delegate at the adults' table, as we talked about, where the decisions are made. More interesting still is the fact that for a period of time during the early 1900s, the winner or the Western Australian premier, the winner, basically, of winner Western Australian football was decided between the winner of the Goldfields League and the Western Australian Football League. So they played off in a, you know, title fight, to be the champion of WA.
So would that be that similar, if it occurred, the VFL versus the VFA?
Yes.
Would that be the same?
But I think it's interesting, though, that those two competitions were separated by geography rather than politics, really.
Correct.
So Kalgoorlie, they were maybe more open to the idea of playing, like, who's the overall WA winner. Well, I'm not sure would the VFA and the VFL be able to do that?
No, definitely not, no.
No, it more seems to me like a Vic Country versus Vic Footy sort of, Vic Metro sort of footy competition. It's odd for us to look back and think, gee, 1897, there was no grand final.
Yeah.
What happened, Finn?
That's amazing. And I think I find this incredibly interesting that there was going to be.
So they planned to have a final.
They planned the original format for the 1897 finals after the 14 weeks of the home and away matches, just like today, even though we have 23 rounds. There was meant to be a knockout tournament. You know, standard week one, one versus two, three versus four, all that kind of stuff.
So I'll put Tibor in charge of this.
Tibor, how many times have you saved my butt?
But amazing, the VFL abandoned this format on the day the finals were scheduled. Tibor. So on that particular day, there was awful weather.
Isn't it, in 1897 though, isn't it the top four that play in that situation?
Top four do play off in that situation, yeah.
Right, so they have effectively the finalists, but there's a round
they have
robin
to an extent,
tournament.
Yes, and then they've just decided to kind of go against what they were going to do, a one versus two, three versus four kind of a thing, and just go bugger it, let's go round robin, 3 weeks each, whoever's on top wins.
Yeah,
yeah, and it really works out, doesn't it, for one particular club, Finn, who is it?
With the Bombers?
Yeah.
Essen? Same olds?
Probably.
That amazingly happened in 1924 as well. Where...
Yeah, very old.
We will discuss...
Let's come to that in a minute.
We will discuss that in a few minutes.
1898 is effectively what's known as the Argus system. The Argus is the Melbourne newspaper. And
which James Thompson wrote for.
Yep. And Fitzroy defeat Essendon the following year at the Junction Oval in front of 16,500 fans. But the new system, Finn, how does it work? It's 1898. 1897's been a round robin for the top four. That all changes in 1898 and effectively makes those home and away games like exhibition games. Why?
You had Group A, 1, 3, 5, 7. Group B, 2, 4, 6, 8. And it did not matter what happened during the season. But again, I guess the 1897 season, I guess it kind of did because you only have the top four playing. But in this one, you had all eight teams playing.
Yeah, and those odds and evens play in their own round-robin tournaments.
Yep.
So two lots of round-robin tournaments, which makes every other game that's happened previously redundant.
Yep.
And then the winners of those two mini comps become finalist playoffs. And there's a funny thing about a minor premier.
That could be the grand final. if the minor premier wins.
If they're involved, if they were the victorious.
If they're involved, but if they're not, then that goes into another week.
Which is, they have the right to challenge.
You can challenge that, and then that next week becomes the grand final.
I find of interest in 1899, and this is my own little research project. I did some research, gentlemen. You did? Yeah, I thought you'd be proud of me. At the Junction Oval, which is the place where the grand finals were in the first 2 years, only 4,800 attend. And we were trying to work out why. Turns out it was just pissing down rain and people didn't really feel very fondly about going down to the St Kilda Cricket Club to watch a game of footy.
Yeah.
And so it's the lowest by miles. It's the next lowest is the year previous of 16,000, and then every other year is 20,000 plus, even 30,000 plus after 1900. So there's just some meaningless interesting statistics.
No, it's good. So 4,000, the next lowest is 16,000.
Yeah, so 4,800, that's on that 1899 grand final, 16,000 the previous year in 1898, then 20,000 in 1900, and 30,000, and then the numbers just inflate.
Yeah.
For those people who like to get academic about it, the grand finals are held at the Junction Oval for 2 years, then the East Melbourne Cricket Ground, then Lake Oval, which I presume is the South Melbourne ground, and then the MCG takeover for the majority of the time until the war years. During that time, I think Melbourne are no longer playing, and there's reduced numbers during the World War II years. Princes Park and the Junction Oval host grand finals. Then it returns to the MCG all the way up until that 1 year where the Melbourne Cricket Ground Southern Stand was being designed and erected. And at VFL Park, they managed to squeeze in 75,000 to watch Hawthorn win another fucking flag.
West Coast was it
against West Coast, with you know, Sumich just couldn't get the job done up there. And look, those are the times which I can't wait to get to as a podcast. By the way, where that's where the real romance for me develops as a small child, because
we won't be able to get a word in edgewise.
Yeah, that's right. So, anyway, that's where they were housed. The highest ever recorded grand final crowd is 121,696. That's in that famous game that apparently changes the game forever. It's Carlton Collingwood. Collingwood absolutely dominating at halftime, and the one where Barassi says, no matter what you do, just go out and hand pass. And the game becomes free-flowing, moving the ball at all costs, running. And finals is what everyone remembers, really. Yeah, exactly. You know, and grand finals particularly. So how does it all change right back there at the start of the 20th century? We've got an Argus system that ultimately doesn't make sense to us now, because it makes the home and away rounds meaningless. How does it all change?
Well, absolutely. And again, the Argus system, named after the paper, which James B. Thompson, who was part of the Rules Committee in 1859, wrote for. In 1901, it was effectively a simple four-team knockout tournament where the minor premier could challenge. However, in this time, the minor premier wasn't as clear-cut as it would seem. The minor premier wasn't the winner at the end of the home and away series. Was actually at this time the winner after the home and away, the finals, including week two. So whoever was in front after the home and away season, plus week one of the finals, plus week two of the finals.
So that includes the points from the finals and the percentage.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know, once again, the grand final would be played between the team with the best record plus the winner of the previous final.
Yep.
And again, the issue with this system is that the right to challenge did not automatically go to the team that was in front after the home and away series. So again, you know, what's the point of, you know, of playing the home and away series or being in front? And this could have occurred in the 1906 series, where Carlton had an overall record of 15-3. Fitzroy had the overall record of 14-4. But Fitzroy had the overall percentage. So in the event that Fitzroy won, which they didn't, but both clubs would have been level on 15-4, and Fitzroy would have been ranked above Carlton with a superior percentage and would have won.
It seems like the right result happened in that year, though, because Carlton defeated Fitzroy 15-4, 94 to 6-9, 45 for the Maroons. So the Blues were definitely the right victors in that particular circumstance, you feel.
Absolutely. But Carlton were the ones to complain. Even though they won, they were the ones to complain because of this confusion, and they lodged a complaint with the VFL, and amendments were made in 1907. The Argus system was changed because there was a confusion, because clubs believed that if you were in front, if you were you know, on top of the ladder, yes, after the home and away series, then that you were the minor premiership. Yeah. However, for six years, that was not the case, and clubs were absolutely confused on this.
Well, it worked out okay for Carlton, really, because they've won 06, 07, 08, and then been runner-up 09 and 10 to South Melbourne and Collingwood. So what is it that actually changes after that 1906 change? So when it changes back to the minor premier, is the at the home and away
leader? Yeah, not much at all, leader. But a clarification on the minor premier now is after the home and away series, and also that the semi-finals would be played on separate weekends. So the VFL kind of got a little bit more...
Hence the first and second semi-finals. Exactly. Right.
So they pushed it out a little bit more. Week one, first semi-final, second versus fourth. Week two, first versus top of the third. Week three, the winner of each. Now, again, if that winner of each does not include the minor premier,
yep,
it would move on to the winner of that particular final versus the challenge of the minor premier. Once again, the variation of the Argus system was introduced to the VFA actually in 1903, 4 years before the VFL. So this particular Argus system was already introduced in the VFA in 1903, which is another...
It's funny that, isn't it?
Yeah, which is another, which we've talked about in previous episodes, that they were at the forefront of innovation for the early years of... from our episode of The Breakaway, where they introduced the 18 men before the VFL. They introduced the abolition of the little marking before the VFL.
The VFA, trying to be new, different, exciting, introduce new things, but they continue to be a draft model for the VFL to effectively say, yeah, that looks okay. We'll have some of that because we've seen it. And yeah, we can endorse that. We can have a hand pass. We can have a final system like this and so on. So there's a huge change, though, and the exciting change for the way that we know about finals is when... is it at the end of 1930, Finn?
Yeah, so at the end of 1930, we kind of have moved into what we know now, the Page-McIntyre system, where we've got that top something, 5, 6, 8, as we know it now, 4... And they play off in some sort of a
multi-stage
system. And this actually almost is exclusive to Australian footy, Ryan Miller?
Well, to a certain extent. I just love the fact that the VFL, but inadvertently, like through the VFA, really, was so experimental and really happy to sort of change this and really look at like possible ways to create fairness. And that's basically what we're talking about here. They're trying to create systems of fairness. Because there's loads, if you go around world sport, there are loads and loads of different ways of lining up different tournaments. But they fall into, well, three major categories, really. You look at like knockout tournaments. So basically, you play another team, you get eliminated if you lose. What they call single elimination tournaments. Things like the FA Cup, which is the oldest one really in existence still. And then there's others, what they call double elimination tournaments, where you get a chance. So if you make, you know, if you lose one game, then you still get a chance to go through. Mm-hmm. Things like rowing regattas have a lot of these.
Really?
They have repercharges. So basically you lose your first heat, or you don't lose it, but you finish in the bottom three of your first heat. Those three will go into what they call a repercharge, and the repercharge will be the... six slowest, basically, from the semi-finals, and they race to see who's, and then they might get an opportunity to go into the final. Similar happens in athletics. You know, long distance running, they have what they call fastest losers.
Yes.
And those guys with the fastest times from their heats, they go through. Yes. So that's what they sort of call a double elimination tournament. So AFL built around that kind of idea of like a second chance as we know it now. But this is where it gets really complicated, is that you get knockout tournaments, but then you have group tournaments. So like a round robin situation. So you have a season. So everyone plays everyone, and then there's like a ladder. And then at the end of that season, you have a winner. Who's on top? Who's won the most games? Who's got the most points? Fantastic. Here's your trophy. Well done. Off you go home. But this AFL and a few other sports have started, used what they call a multi-stage tournament, where they start having both, because one's obviously not enough. So you need, we'll have our round robin season. And maybe this is because of the number of teams involved. They've got it's a long winter. Not a huge number of teams. They want the idea of going, we'll have this number of round robin games, and then we'll have a final series, so it goes for the whole winter, and we've got more people coming to games, and we get more money and all that kind of stuff. That's possibly why they're doing it. If they had 24 teams from the outset, would they have done it? Don't know, but possibly not. And that's why maybe soccer, and you mentioned it before, Liam, like maybe the UK has a different system. But yeah, these multi-stage tournaments, and there's loads of examples of them around the world. If you look at the US, they do it geographically as well. They have conferences, East and West. Mm. So you can look at all across different sports. Well, the one that caught my eye was the Slovenian Basketball League. Yes. This is one that I really like. So the Slovenian Basketball League have 13 teams in their competition. So 12 of the 13 teams play in a home and away season. So you're wondering what happens to the other team. Well, they're playing in a different competition. They're playing in what they call the Euro League, which is like the best teams in Europe. So if you win their comp, you get sent to this Euro League.
So you don't play home and away.
So you don't play against any of the other teams. No, you don't play in your domestic competition at all.
You go off to a Champions League.
But so you go off to a Champions League thing for the entirety of the season. Then what happens is the top six teams go into one comp and the bottom six teams go into another comp. But here's the weird bit. Guess what they do? They bring back the other team from that point into their final system. So the guy, they haven't played them all year. And then suddenly this other team comes back and they play in their top six or seven elimination comp. And then they have their finals. So they have a top comp. It gets better. So they've got a top comp. And then, you know, with their seven teams now in it, they have a winner. What happens to the other six teams who finish in the bottom six?
For a plate or something?
No, they play off of relegation. So they have promotion and relegation from other competitions. So if you lose that the competition, you get relegated out of that competition completely. So if you think the Australian system's quite complicated, then I challenge you to get involved with Slovenian basketball, because I'm telling you, I read for it a bit, and to say I glazed over was, you know, sort of putting it mildly, I think. But look, it's fascinating stuff. There's lots out there. But yeah, the Australian system, the way it's adapted, and that kind of striving to kind of create a really fair system, which goes for the length of time that you wanted to go for, I think it's the most unique thing about it.
And of course, I guess because we were separate from that public school system, that we actually did have a deadline. Cricket was coming up.
Yeah, same grounds.
And it's not like we had the entire school semester. There was nothing like that.
Yeah.
Cricket was going to start at the first weekend of October, just like today.
Yeah.
Which is one of the reasons why the AFL has abandoned their the week after the grand final. There's no longer a draw anymore. Because Cricket Australia has... We're scheduled in for the first Sheffield Shield match. That's what's occurring at the MCG.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, obviously, the shape of the ground, conducive cricket, footy, everyone's playing on the same grounds, whether you're playing local level or anything. That's not the same in Europe. Soccer grounds, different shape. People have different, you know, there's different pitches. They organise things. The soccer season in the UK doesn't seem to end. It just goes forever. They're just constantly playing. Half a year. Yeah, it's just, you know, but they didn't have that freedom. So they've really got to nail down their timeline really, really effectively.
So at a local level, the amateur comps and local comps still use a version of the McIntyre system, most using the Final Four, which is done within 3 weeks, and very exciting and reliable. And worth noting, we haven't always just managed to get the job done in September. During the 1940s and 1930s, it ran all the way into October. One time as late as the 20th of October. I'm not sure whether that was impinging on a Cox plate or something that particular year, but that's quite late. The 1923 Grand Final between Essendon and Fitzroy, won by Essendon, was held on the 20th at the Melbourne Cricket Ground. I've come across a few facts that I just find to be interesting. So the idea of the flag being given out.
Yeah.
That's much older than you might think. It was actually 1895 in the VFA. So the VFA have been the origin of something that's such a fine tradition. They gave out the flag in 1895 and it was unfurled. And that becomes a tradition, that the start of the next season is the unfurling of the flag, very exciting for supporters and members to get along to.
The first round that would be played.
Yeah, the first round that they play at home. So, if you investigate it, there's a Carlton Footy Club at Princes Park unveiling their 1906 flag in 1907 at Princes Park. That pennant sort of idea becomes commonplace across all local leagues all the way from that time, but all the way back to 1895. The other bit was the cup itself. Oh, the 1895, by the way, was Fitzroy's flag. So Fitzroy, the Maroons...
The VFA.
Yeah, they're dominant throughout those early phases, along with the Bombers. But the cup's not introduced until 1959.
We have missed one particular important year. 1924.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Now...
What nugget of wisdom happened that year?
Look, it certainly is up for conjecture of whether it was a wisdom or not. But once again, the VFL, the powers that be, decided to trial this new format, or actually it wasn't a new format, where there was a four-team round robin. Again. But including the minor premier's right to challenge. So at the end of the home and away season, the top four teams qualified for the finals tournament. As usual, week one, play three, two, play four. Week two, one, play two, three, play four, et cetera, et cetera. Over 3 weeks. At the conclusion of the 3 weeks, if the minor premier had finished on top of the ladder, then automatically, premiership. Done. No need for a grand final. But if another team had won the round robin competition, then it would progress until the next week. So you would have some sort of a grand final.
So the minor premier would play
the first of the round robin competition. Yes. And again, the winner of this match would become the major premier. So interestingly, and this is, I guarantee you, our listeners do not know this. And as an Essendon fan, it hurts me to say, but amazingly, much like the 1897 season, the VFL could have been without a grand final, and it was. Due to Essendon of winning the minor premiership of that year, it was awarded the premiership without having played a grand final, just like our first one in 1897. So Essendon have 16 premierships.
They should have 14.
Only played 14 grand finals.
Yeah, right.
So, look, I'm going to take it as a Bombers fan. However, I don't know how it would have felt during those years where we've won a flag but actually haven't played for one.
Thank you to our contributors today, Ryan Miller.
Thanks, guys. Brilliant.
Putt Straight. And Finn O'Sullivan.
Thank you very much, gentlemen.
And even though it's finals time, be careful not to get ahead of yourselves and take it one game at a time.